1 says, afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and 2 other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we'll go out with you. So they went out and got into the boat. But that night, they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garments around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire burning coals with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have just caught. So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples asked, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the 3rd time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The 3rd time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him the 3rd time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you were old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. Because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that the disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have enough room for the books that would be written. We've been given some thought to Ephesians 6 over the past number of weeks, and specifically to putting on the armor of God that we might stand in the day of evil, that when the day of evil comes, we would be ready to stand, that we can take our stands against the devil's schemes. And I'm persuaded of its importance, and I would urge you to consider its practice, to walk through that again and again, to think about how you are standing and whether you are adequately prepared for the day of evil. But I guess, having considered that, it's easy for failure then to feel overwhelming. That we fall short of the mark, and as a result get caught in this space of disappointment with ourselves that we cannot deal with. And so famously, John 21 records what's seen as Peter's restoration. So I wanted to think with you about it this morning. Peter had no intention of betraying Jesus. Matthew 26 and verse 31, Jesus told them, "This very night you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I've risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." "Truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." But Peter declared, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the other disciples said the same. Luke 22 and verse 31, "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you've turned back, strengthen your brothers." But he replied, "Lord, I am ready to go to prison and to death with you." Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. You will deny three times that you know me." John 13 and verse 36. Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I'm going, you cannot follow, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." Mark 14 and verse 29, Peter declared, "Even if all fall away, I will not." "Truly, I tell you," Jesus answered, "today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." But Peter insisted emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the others said the same. Every single gospel writer records the fact that Peter argues with Jesus when Jesus says, "You're going to deny me three times." Every single gospel writer. Not every single gospel writer records Peter's denial of Jesus, but all of them record his debate with Jesus. "Even if everybody else does, I never will. Even if all fall away, not me. I'll die with you. I'll go to prison with you. I am in this. I am committed." This is not a man who's half-hearted. He's not unsure. He has every intent of following Jesus to the very end. The idea that he might deny Jesus is inconceivable to him. He's in that upper room. Jesus is saying, "This is what's going to happen." And Peter is emphatically saying, "No. No, it won't. I won't do that." And I guess there's a reality where at times we don't recognize our own vulnerability. I'm going to say it like this. There's a danger we consider ourselves invincible. So 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12 says, if you think you're standing well, be careful in case you fall. If you think you're in a good position and you're standing strong, be careful in case you fall. Because there's a danger that we get to a place where we believe we're invincible because we've done well for a while. We've walked and we would never fail. And yet you know exactly what happens. Matthew 26 and verse 69. Peter was sitting out in the courtyard and a servant girl came to him. "You also were with Jesus of Galilee," she said. But he denied it before them all. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. Then he went out to the gateway where another servant girl saw him. and said to the people there, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." He denied it again with an oath, "I don't know the man." After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away." Then he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, "I don't know the man." Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. John 18 and verse 26 is an interesting detail. It says, one of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him. "Didn't I see you with him in the garden?" Again, Peter denied it, and at that moment, a rooster began to crow. There's no intention for Peter of denying Jesus. He's not considered it a possibility. He goes from a man who is violently defending Jesus in the garden and swiping people's ears off to being afraid of children and saying, "No, I don't know him." And I guess for a lot of us, our failures aren't a result of intention. Romans 7 says this, verse 15. "I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it is sin living in me. For I know that good itself does not dwell in me, that is, in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Now if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me that does it. So I find this law at work. Although I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being I delight in God's law, but I see another law at work in me, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin at work within me. What a wretched man I am. Who will rescue me from this body that is subject to death? Thanks be to God who delivers me through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then I myself in my mind am a slave to God's law, but in my sinful nature I am a slave to the law of sin." Paul expresses something that I think most of us understand. We've got good intentions. We love him. We want to do the right thing. But at times, we do the wrong thing, even though we don't want to. And at times, we don't do the thing we want to do that's good. And the issue in Romans 7, as far as Paul's concerned, is there's a sinful nature in you. And so it's not necessarily that I intend to go out and fail. There are times, I'll just be honest with you this morning, where I know what I'm doing is wrong, and I do it anyway. Right? There are times, and I have spoken to you about this on occasion, feels like a lot in my head, but it might not be, where I am ignoring my conscience or justifying my behavior to myself in order to do the thing that I know is wrong. Right? That I have the argument with myself and tell myself why it's okay to do the thing that I know is wrong. But there are also times where I act instinctively and then regret immediately. That having done my best to walk faithfully, somebody might cut me up on the road, and suddenly there's a rage within me that has bubbled over, and I haven't stopped for a moment to think about it. There is no wrestling with my conscience. I'm not trying to explain myself to myself. This is not thought about. It's just instinctive. I'm wanting to shout at them and tell them how awful a person they are for their bad driving. And I wouldn't want you to think I've got road rage, but if you speak to Jane, she might give you a different impression. And I think there's a dangerous place we end up in at times where we don't recognize our capacity to fail. I have a sinful nature. I am putting off the old, being made new in the attitude of my mind and putting on the new. But sometimes the old hasn't been quite put off yet. There's times where I don't get it right. I don't nail it. And Peter doesn't have any intention of failing Jesus. But he does fail. He does the thing he says he would never do. And so Jesus shows up for a third time to the disciples. Peter's decided he's going out fishing. A number of others have joined him. And they fished all night and caught nothing. This is not the first time Peter has fished all night and caught nothing. For a fisherman, I've got questions about his ability. Because Luke 5, Peter fishes all night and catches nothing. Verse 4 of Luke 5 says, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. When they'd done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partner. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything and followed him. It's really interesting to me that almost we have the exact same story following Peter's denial. They fished all night, caught nothing. And Jesus says, try the other side. And they catch a miraculous amount of fish. 153 large fish were just apparently on the other side of the boat. Fished all night and caught nothing. And if they just had the nets on the other side, apparently. Peter's denied Jesus. He's called down curses, swore he didn't know him. After sitting with Jesus, telling him he would never disown him. And Jesus finds Peter in his boat again. And seems to remind him of this moment. There's not a lecture. There's not a discussion. There's a parallel of this first encounter. And I wonder if at times in my shortcomings, I need to remember he chose me. John 15 and verse 16, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. That before I got all churchified, before I became a better person, Before I was all Christian-y, knew the right things to say, how to act, how to respond in moments, Christ came and found me. That he stepped into my life and called me to himself. And not because of my brilliance, not because of my perfection, that I didn't come to Jesus because I thought I could make Jesus better. I didn't come to him because I thought I had something to offer him. Corinthians 1 and verse 27. God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are. And Peter's response in the boat the first time is, get away from me, I'm a sinful man. But he chose him. Aware of all of his limitations, conscious of all of his weaknesses. And one of the senses for me is that the shame that accompanies failure is huge. That when I get it wrong, it's embarrassing. That I'm disappointed. I've let God down. As if somehow I was holding him up. As if somehow he didn't know who I was. As if somehow he wasn't aware. And I wanted to remind you this morning, he chose you. He chose you. Knowing who you were, what you were, and what you were going to do. Jesus wasn't unclear about Peter's denial. He still chose him. And then he shows up cooking for him. They catch the fish. John turns to Peter and says, it's the Lord. And Peter does something that I want to urge all of you to do. Peter runs towards him recklessly. Peter doesn't hide. He doesn't disappear. Doesn't duck into the middle of the boat and go, listen, I hope he doesn't see me. I did that thing I said I would never do. Because the response for us at times is that very thing, right? I have failed. It's been a bad week. I'm not going to church. I don't feel like I'm in a place, you know, really to go to God right now. I need to deal with some stuff first before I can, you know, come to... I mean, it's stupid. Let me not sound too harsh, but it's stupid. He's what I need in those moments. I need to run to him in those times. I need his grace and his help. And so I'm invited, and I've told you this again and again, to boldly approach the throne of grace, to find mercy and grace to help me in my time of need. I don't need to hide when I've got it wrong. I need to come to him. And I'm staggered. that the risen and resurrected Jesus is on the beach cooking breakfast. For a guy who denied him. For a guy who argued about the fact he would deny him, told him he wouldn't, and then didn't just deny him, but he swore and called down curses because he was so adamantly denying him. And Jesus is there going, eat. I've made this for you. Have some breakfast. If that isn't an incredible picture of grace, I don't know what is. You think there might be other things to do. You think there would be times where, I mean, if ever somebody's too important to cook your breakfast, surely it's the risen Jesus. How utterly humbling. It's utterly incredible. And then Jesus has this conversation with Peter. Do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you were distressed and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. If it was me, I think I might want to have a conversation about what happened. I might just want to, you know, get my 2 pence worth in first. Pete, do you remember you said you would never? You would never. And then you did. Do you remember we had that conversation and you said, Lord, if everybody else does, I won't. Look, I'll die with you. I'm not going anywhere. And then that very thing you said you'd never do, you did. What was that about? Do you want to explain that to me? You think we might have some things to address here. But the only thing Jesus wants to ask is, do you love me? Do you love me? People at times make much of the Greek words in that sentence. I don't think they matter. Because Peter affirms what Jesus is asking him every time. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Do you love me? Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. The thing that matters more than anything else as a Christian person? Is that you love him? Do you love him? And Peter's frustrated by the question. Because as far as he's concerned, Jesus should know he loves him. But I won't be perfect. I won't nail it all. I'll get it wrong sometimes. That's not me trying to excuse sinfulness. But it is a recognition of my humanity. And some of us, if we're honest, we're faithful. We've been here for a while. We've walked the road for a long time. But if we're talking about love, our heart might be somewhere else. If you love him, you will obey his commands. It's what John 14 and verse 15 says. If you love him, you'll be able to recover when it goes wrong. And I want to walk faithfully. And I want to do everything to stand. And I don't have any intention of falling or failing. It's not my desire. It's not my heart. But more than anything, I love him. And I might get it wrong, but I still love him. And I'm able to serve his purpose because I love him. Peter doesn't stop getting it wrong. You go and read Galatians 2. Paul has told Peter off for failing. Because he's busy trying to impress the Jews. But he loves him. Not a particularly impressive sermon. But it is the crucial issue of my life. Do you love him? You might have got it wrong. There's grace for you, but do you love him? You might not nail it tomorrow. Doesn't write you off. But do you love him? Because that's the bit that matters most. So we stand together and worship.